What do you do when somebody cuts you off in traffic? Boy, that is a telling chuckle right there. What do you do when your nemesis at work sends a rude email and CCs your superintendent, your supervisor? What do you do when a family member slights you at the family cookout? What do you do when your underqualified, incompetent boss makes you the fall guy again? What do you do when your coach plays favorites and benches you? What do you do when your beliefs are attacked online? What do you do when a classmate says something mean to you? What do you do when your convictions are insulted by someone who stands or won't stand? What do you do when fellow Christians act like total hypocrites to you? Maybe we spout off a comeback. Oh yeah, well, at least I don't. Maybe we fire back an equally rude email, as you will see per my last email. Maybe we attack their character. Well, they're just doing that because they're selfish. Maybe we badmouth them to a friend. You'll never guess what they did. Maybe we withhold something from them, like attention or love or in a marriage, sex. Maybe we give them the silent treatment. Maybe we cancel them. Maybe we hold a grudge. We say we will forgive them, but in our heart, we're keeping a record of wrongs. Maybe we do something passive-aggressive. We quiet quit. We take longer breaks at work. We stop trying so hard. What do we do when somebody wrongs us? In one way or another, in plain ways and in subtle ways, what do we so often do? We often repay evil for evil. That's what we do. We repay evil for evil. That's one of the most natural human responses. You push me, I push you back. You come at me, I'll come back at you. You cut me off, I'll flip you off. You embarrass me, I'll ruin you. You made me feel alone, I'll never come back. We repay evil for evil. And, or maybe it's the subtler form for you. You withheld love from me, I'll withhold all love from you. You left me out, I'll ghost you forever. You won't know, but I'm not here anymore. I'm not invested in anymore. That's so often our natural response, to meet evil with evil, to fire right back. And here's the thing. The Bible, well, God in the Bible says, don't do that. Don't do that. Never repay evil for evil. Never repay evil for evil. Never repay evil for evil. And this morning, we're going to continue our study of the life of David. And in the three episodes of his life we're going to look at this morning, we're going to see just how serious God is about that truth. Never repay evil for evil. We're going to see it played out over and over again. And we're going to see just how serious God is about that command. And we're going to be helped this morning, but we're also going to learn something about why that is. Why is it important that you don't repay evil for evil? So we're going to jump into 1 Samuel 24. There are three stories. We're going to look at story 1 and then 3, and then we'll end on story 2, and I'll tell you why in a minute. So if you want to look with me at 1 Samuel 24, we'll kind of skim down through it, and we'll hit a few key verses. We don't have time to read each chapter in its entirety, so I will summarize. Now, while you're getting there, let me give you a quick refresher where we are. Just a reminder, we started off with King Saul, the first king of Israel. He did not follow the Lord, and the Lord said, I'm taking the kingdom from you, and I'm going to give it to someone else. That someone else is David, who we're studying. David is a man after God's own heart. He is an exemplary king of the Old Testament, although he is far from perfect, as we'll see later on. But now we're in this in-between time where it's already been said to Saul that the kingdom's taken from you. It's already been said to David, the kingdom is coming to you. But it's not quite clear how this transition is going to happen. And so in the meantime, we've seen Saul is trying to kill David out of jealousy and resentment. And David is on the run. And that was the last message 2 weeks ago that Jared shared, that David is on the run. And we saw David's faith there in the cave as he's on the run. Now this week we pick up then with David on the run. Now, story 1, 1 Samuel 24. David refuses to kill Saul in a cave. Now this is where we pick up. Now in this episode, David and his men are hiding in a cave where we left them last time. And the craziest thing happens. While they're hiding in the inner reaches of the cave, Saul is still on the lookout for David. And Saul happens into this very cave they're hiding in to go to the bathroom. And David and his men are in the inner part of the cave, and they see what's happening here, and they can't believe it. Can you believe it? Saul's right there. And they tell David, this is it. Look at this. The Lord's given him into your hands. Go kill him. I assume that's a elevated whisper, probably. Do it. So David stealthily creeps up to Saul. He's not going to kill him, but he's going to creep up. He gets close enough there where Saul is presumably squatting. This is in the text. And he cuts off a piece of his robe, like a little token, show just how close he was. Now, as soon as he does that, he feels terrible. Because Saul is still the active king of Israel. And as the active king of Israel, selected by God previously, it's too presumptuous even to do that. So David feels bad, and he goes back to the men. He says, I can't kill him. Now, I want you to hear this crucial verse here. Verse 12, we hear what David's thinking here. David says, Let me back up. After this, Saul departs. We got to get Saul out on the road. Saul goes out onto the road, and now David emerges from the cave and shouts out after Saul as he's down the road now at a safe distance. And he says, hey, look, Saul, I have this piece of fabric from your robe. I was so close. I could have struck you dead like that, but I didn't do it. Don't you know that I'm not out to get you? You say I'm your enemy. I'm not your enemy. I could have killed you today, and I did not do it. Now, I want to read verse 12. All right, verse 12. And he says this to Saul. May the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you. But my hand shall not be against you. That's what David says. In other words, I'm not going to repay evil for evil. Let the Lord judge. I'm not going to. Let the Lord avenge. I will not. My men urge me to kill you, but I'm not doing it. I won't do it. Let the Lord judge. Never repay evil for evil. Now, is David right? Maybe he's being overly generous here. Well, we get from Saul's reaction a confirmation of what David just said. Saul blesses David, confirming what David's thinking here. All right, look down at verse 17. This is what Saul says in response to this. He says, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, in that you did not kill me when the Lord put me into your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he not let him go away safe? No. So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now, behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand." So Saul says, "You are the better man. Your decision not to take matters into your own hands is the right one. You've repaid me good for evil. You're the better man. You will rule. You will reign." So conclusion, episode one, story one, conclusion, never repay evil for evil. David's on track here. Now, flip over a couple chapters, story three. Now, in this episode, despite Saul's kind words there that we just read, he's still back to his pursuit of David. He wants David dead. So maybe he felt bad for a minute, but he's right back to pursuing David. And in this episode, now David sends out some spies to figure out where Saul is. They find that Saul is encamped out in a field. So episode 2, 1 Samuel 26, David refuses to kill Saul in a field. It's a little bit like green eggs and ham. Would you kill him in a cave? Would you kill him in a field, on a train, in a plane? No, he will not. Okay, he will not kill Saul. So they're out in the plain now, and David says to some of his men, I love this, he says, "Hey, you want to go down there and let's pay him a little visit?" And Abishai, one of his guys, says, "Yeah, let's go, let's do it." So they sneak down to the camp under the cover of darkness, and they make their way right up to Saul. Saul is sound asleep on the ground. His spear, okay, the spear that he would have thrown at David, you remember earlier, to try to kill him, is right there at his head, stuck in the ground. And Abishai says, "What an opportunity. I mean, what a chance. I mean, a chance to make things right, a chance for justice, a chance for poetic justice. Let's take his spear, the one he tried to kill you with, and let's kill him." He says, "Give me the spear, let me strike him." He says, "It won't take me 2 tries. David says, "No, no, no, we can't do this." So David says, let's just take his spear and his water bottle. And again, listen to what David says here, verse 10. "As the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him." Let's not do this, Abishai. "The Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But take now the spear that is at his head and the jar of water, and let us go." So they sneak back out, and they get up to a safe place, and they shout down at the camp. They say, "Good morning, boys. You guys haven't done very well. We were right there. Great job guarding the king." And he shows them the spear, and he shows them Saul Stanley. And he says, "Look, we were right there. We could have done whatever we wanted." And then again, he says, "Look, do you really think I'm your enemy? I'm not your enemy. I could have harmed you. I didn't harm you. Don't you see? I'm not your enemy." Now, is David, again, being overly generous? I mean, are we overemphasizing this point? Don't repay evil for evil? Is he being too magnanimous? Well, again, we see in Saul's response the truth of what David has said confirmed. Look now at verse 21. This is how Saul responds to this. "Then Saul said, 'I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do you harm.'" Which we question, right? "Because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Behold, I have acted foolishly and have made a great mistake." And David answered and said, "Here is the spear, O king. Let one of the young men come over and take it. The Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord gave you into my hand today, and I would not put out my hand against the Lord's anointed. Behold, as your life was precious this day in my sight, so may my life be precious in the sight of the Lord. May he deliver me out of all tribulation." Then Saul said to David, "Blessed be you, my son David. You will do many things and will succeed in them." So David went away and Saul returned to his place. Conclusion. Never repay evil for evil. This is what David says. I won't do it. The Lord will take care of Saul. I'm not going to do it. He's the Lord's anointed. I'm not going to do it. He will take care of him. And then Saul's response is, "David, you're right. You're the better man. I see it. You, again, I'm giving you evil for good. You are giving me good for evil." Never repay evil for evil. Final story, story two. Flip back to 1 Samuel 25. We have a new character now. Two new characters, Abigail and Nabal. And in this story, Abigail refuses to let David kill Nabal. Now, I've saved this middle story to the end because I think this story goes into the most detail about why David should not take justice into his own hands. And this story expands that command and that principle a little bit farther, applies it more broadly. So we end here on this story. Now, in this story, David and his men, they're on the run, and they need supplies. And they know this wealthy guy named Nabal. He's got all these herds and flocks. He's in sheep shearing season, which apparently is a festive time, and there's feasting going on, according to the text. And so David sends some of his men to these shepherds and says, "Hey, could we have some food? All right, you guys got all this partying going on. Here's our situation. Could we have, you know, a nugget off the platter? You know, could we, is that okay?" And besides that, David and his men had actually been serving these shepherds for a while now. They've been providing some protection for them, watching out for them. So it seems like the least they could do. Now, Nabal, we're told, is a real jerk. And Nabal's response is unsurprisingly very jerkish. He says, "No way. Who is this son of Jesse?" He says, "You know, there's a lot of people running away these days. Am I supposed to help them all out?" And he gives this answer that not only is no, but it's really a scoffing answer. He scoffs at this request, insults David. You know, he ignores any kind of commands in Israel towards hospitality. And besides, David already provided protection for them. So it's a terrible answer. It's an unkind answer. All they're asking for is a little bit of food from the party. Well, this gets back to David, and David is furious. I can't believe this. Here we've protected their flocks. Here we've been a help to them. We're in a time of need. All we're asking for is a nugget off the party platter. That's all we need. He tells all his guys, get your swords. We're going to take out Nabal and anyone with him. Now the servants of Nabal get wind of this, and they rush off to Nabal's wife, Abigail, who we're told is a beautiful and wise woman. And they explain to her the whole situation. And she quickly gathers up supplies, gathers up presents, hops on her donkey, and rides off, yes, donkey, to meet him. And this is where we pick up. I want you to hear the interchange now between Abigail and David. So she rides off to intercept David before this massacre can take place. All right, verse 23, and I'm going to warn you, the sentences here are hard to follow, so put on your thinking cap. Okay. Verse 23 of 1 Samuel 25. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, on me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, which apparently means kind of a fool, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then, let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. Which is to say, you'll be with the ones that the Lord cares for. You'll be bundled up with the living. And the lives of your enemies, in contrast, shall he sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. So Abigail intercedes and she pleads with David. And what does she ask David to do? Don't repay evil for evil. Please, David, don't do this. Don't repay evil for evil. And I kind of wonder if in between the two stories of Saul, the Lord gave David this moment to really clarify this point, to make this firm in his heart and his convictions. Because it took her interceding and saying, don't do this, David, to make sure he gets this. So she pleads. But here, we get the longest discussion of why this is. I'm just going to briefly hit four things that we learn from what she says. Never repay evil, and we get some reasons. One, because crimes of passion are still crimes. In our day, we have something called a crime of passion. Not a lawyer, but My understanding is that you might get a lighter sentence if it's deemed that what you did was a crime of passion. You know, in the heat of the moment, you did something, wasn't premeditated. Recognize maybe your responsibility is a little bit lower in that, but you still did a crime, right? You might get manslaughter instead of outright murder, but you still did something wrong. And here, this is what Abigail says. David, if you do this, look, I understand that you're mad. I understand that what he did was wrong. I understand that he didn't care for you, though you've cared for him. But if you do it, you'll incur blood guilt. You'll have blood on your hands. What you're doing is wrong. You're going to shed blood unnecessarily. You're going to kill some of his servants that really had no part in this. Don't do it. I understand that you're upset, but it doesn't justify what you're about to do. Crime of passion is still a crime. So when we think about, okay, why we keep saying the same phrase over and over again, never repay evil for evil. One reason why we don't want to do that is because it doesn't fix anything, right? When you fire back that email, when you spout off with that comeback, when you withhold your love from somebody, it doesn't fix the evil. What does it do according to Abigail? It just makes the evil meter in our world go up. There's just more evil in our world, not less evil. So we tend to think somehow this is going to even the balances. We're going to get even is what we say. But all it does is add evil to our world, and it doesn't fix anything. So she says, don't do this. You're going to incur blood guilt. There'll be blood on your hands. Second thing, never repay evil for evil because self-salvation dishonors you and God. Abigail here uniquely puts her finger on the issue. This phrase actually comes out a few times in this chapter. We read it once here. But she talks about saving with your own hand. You will have worked salvation for yourself. That's part of the problem. She's saying, you know what you're trying to do when you return evil for evil? When you bring a judgment on somebody like that? Do you know what you're doing? You're trying to work salvation for yourself. Self-salvation. And when you do that, you're taking the place of God. And she makes this interesting comment, right? He says, if you do that, verse 30, 31, he says, you know, one day the Lord's going to fulfill all his promises, right? You're going to be king. It's all going to work out. And you're going to look back at this moment, and it's just going to be a stain on your record. You're going to have pangs of conscience when you think about what you did. So your story is going to be diminished. You will be dishonored when you repay evil for evil, when you take matters into your own hands. Maybe you'll arrive at what you wanted. Maybe you got even. But there'll be a stain on it. And then on top of that, because you usurped God's timing, God's ways, you're dishonoring him. The Lord said, I will do it. Let me work. And then you took matters into your own hand, so to speak, and diminished the glory of the Lord. You didn't give him a chance to keep his promise. So she says, don't do that, because one day you'll be sitting there on the throne and you'll think back with grief. Your conscience will bother you when you think back at this massacre. So self-salvation, that's what's going on here. Working salvation for yourself. That dishonors you and that dishonors God. Third thing, never repay evil for evil because princes and even punks belong to God. Now this is where the story broadens it out, you know. We've been talking about Saul and David keeps talking about how Saul is God's anointed and who is he to go against God's anointed? He's still the king currently. And that kind of felt intuitively right to us probably. Like, yeah, that makes sense. He's the king. Honor him. Nabal, we're told, is a jerk, as his name is. He's a fool. He's this boorish, rude guy. But even he should not be repaid evil for evil. So this story really expands out what we're talking about here. Princes and punks belong to the Lord. In other words, the dignity that Saul had as king, there is a dignity that Nabal has just as being a human, being made in the image of God. Saul is outside of David's jurisdiction. He can't go kill him, but so is Nabal. Nabal belongs to God as well, and he's outside of David's jurisdiction. So we don't just respect the king, we respect our annoying neighbor. We don't just withhold evil from this person or that, but all people. Fourth thing we see, don't repay evil for evil because God will take care of you and them. God will take care of Nabal, and he will take care of David. Abigail reminds him, right? Again, back in verse 29, he says, the Lord will take care of David. You'll be with the living, cared for by God. The evil, if that's Nabal or whoever else, will be flung out like a stone from a sling. God will take care of this. And again, she points back to the promise. The Lord said he'd make you king. He will make you king. So you don't need to take matters into your own hand because the Lord is faithful. He will take care of you and he will take care of your enemy. And this is, by the way, the gospel ethic part. Because you know what Abigail's saying here is, David, I need you to see the promises of God and trust God. Trust what God has already done. Trust what he's promised to do. And I'm not saying that you need to be this perfect guy to get this. I just need you to live your life out of these promises. God said he'd take care of you. Now live out of that. Don't take matters into your own hand. This is what we preach in the gospel, is that Christ has died for us. God has already demonstrated his love for us in Jesus. And out of that, having seen that, and then received the promises that he will take care of us, that he's adopted us as children, that he will return one day, that he'll give us what we need, that one day he'll restore us completely. We live out of that, and what? Don't repay evil for evil. We're not doing that to get God's blessing. It's because we already have God's blessing that we're able to say, I'm okay. I don't need to take matters in my own hands because the Lord's got me. And that's what Abigail's giving us, a sense of that. David, don't you see who God is for you already? Don't you see he's already promised you? Don't you see he will keep his promise? Don't you know his eyes are on the righteous? Don't you worry. Now live like that. Trust the Lord. Walk it out. So is Abigail right? Now we get a different response. Not from Saul, it's from David. What is David's response? Well, David confirms that she's spot on. Listen to David's answer to Abigail. Verse 32. And David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. Whew, almost did. And you've saved me from it. And by the way, if we had any remaining doubts at the end of this story, Nabal has a heart attack and dies 10 days later. So the Lord took care of Nabal, and the Lord took care of David. But we see in David's response, again, yes, this is it. Never repay evil for evil. That's the right move. He almost slipped. He almost messed up. But Abigail said, don't do it. Don't do it. Now, we're going to wrap up here. Now, at this point, you might say, okay, this is a lot. I mean, you just keep saying that same phrase over and over again. Are we overemphasizing this? No. Okay. It comes up over and over and over again in the New Testament. This very truth. Never repay evil for evil. I want to take us to one passage, Romans 12. It's not just David and Saul. It's not just David and Nabal. It's not just 1 Samuel. Romans 12. And Paul is basing this off of teachings from Jesus. Paul's going to say this and push it even further. Now, we actually bumped into this in the text a little bit, but Paul makes it explicit. He makes it an imperative. Not only never repay evil for evil, but instead repay good for evil. Do good to your enemies. Now, Saul talked about that a little bit, that David had returned him good for evil. Paul now makes that explicit. Do that. Don't just withhold evil, but actually do good to your enemies. Romans 12, we're just going to read a few verses, verse 17. Romans 12, 17. Okay. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, it's not always possible, but if possible, so far as depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Which people disagree a little bit about what that may mean. It may be a sign of shame or a sign of judgment. But you're doing the right thing, indicating that you're in the right. But give them something to drink, for by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Never repay evil for evil. Instead, do good to your enemies. Seriously. The Lord is very serious about this. Jesus said what? Love your enemies. And pray for those who persecute you. Love your enemies. And then he illustrates it by saying that God, when Jesus says it in Matthew 5:44, he illustrates it by saying, you know, God does good things for evil people. Now, if you're like me, I tend to hear that like, okay, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. It's just like tolerate them, don't repay evil. But the imagery he gives is, no, actively actually do good for your enemy. Like do something nice for them. Which, think about that for a second. That's going to look weird. Somebody you don't agree with. You know, pick somebody on a different side of the political aisle, and you're going to serve them? Well, that's going to look like you agree with them. But he says, do good to your enemy. You don't like them? You disagree? Enemy? Don't just tolerate them. Don't just pray for them. Love them. Do good for them. Now, we have a little bit of time. This was a maybe. I think we have time to do this really quick. What might this look like for us? I hit these really fast. From the Bible, examples of what it might look like to not repay evil, but to do good. What might this look like for you? One, allow yourself to be wronged by a Christian. This is from 1 Corinthians 6:7. Paul says Christians get in fights, end up taking each other to court. He's like, oh, it's terrible. What a terrible testimony on the church. Why not rather be wronged, he says. So if you want to try out this lesson, you say, I want to walk in the footsteps of David. I want to really try to do good to my enemy. Okay, this year when somebody in your small group really offends you, just be like, yeah, I'm just going to be wronged just to preserve the unity. When something happens here at church, you're just going to say, it's fine. I'd rather be wrong. I'm just going to let it go. I'll just take it. No amens? All right, number two, honor an unworthy government official. This is from 1 Peter. And he says unworthy, and he says honor. He doesn't say tolerate, he says honor. Honor the emperor. And he's talking about, he didn't say unworthy, but he's talking about the emperor who's very unworthy at the time. Honor him. Honor, wow. So not just pray for them, but actually, like, how would you speak respectfully of them? How would you kind of stand at attention somehow in your life to these various government officials? Third idea, this is from 1 Peter and Colossians. Work hard for a bad boss. Man, that's not fair. Work hard for a bad boss or fill in bad coach, bad teacher. Work hard for him anyways. Peter and Paul are dealing with times where there's still slavery, bondservant, indentured servanthood, all these things. And they say, just do your best. Try to be a good witness even in that. If you're stuck in that, try to be a good witness in that. And they say, even for the bad ones. Fourth and finally, do good to an ideological enemy. Do good to an ideological enemy, which I think, I'm just applying Romans 12 here again, that just pick an enemy. I'm picking an ideological one, somebody that disagrees with you on something, and do something good for them. When I was in seminary around, it was 2003, 2006, somewhere in there in Boston, right at the Capitol building, they were, all these protests about gay marriage and all that stuff was facing legislation in Boston. And on one side of the street were all the Christians with their signs and stuff, and on the other side of the street were all the folks lobbying for gay marriage, and some students from my seminary decided to go down and serve water to the demonstrators on the pro-gay marriage side. How do you feel about that? Doing good for somebody that you feel like is an enemy to what you believe. Serving them water, which is actually what Paul says. Is your enemy thirsty? Give them something to drink. And I share that to put a little bit of teeth on it, okay? How would you feel about that? You say, I would prefer to have been on the other side of the street with the picketing sign. I don't want to be on that side of the street serving water. But Paul, Jesus, Abigail, David would say, never repay evil for evil. Instead, do good to your enemies. So this morning, that's my charge to you, is to be like David. Never repay evil for evil, but do good for your enemies. Why? Abigail told us, right? Because crimes of passion are still crimes. You're just attempting self-salvation, which dishonors you and God. Even punks belong to God. And God will take care of you, and God will take care of them. So you can trust him. May we remember the words of Peter, and I'm going to read this and we'll pray. Here's what Peter says, 1 Peter 3:9 and following. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. For whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. So trust God. Entrust yourself to him. Walk in his ways. Walk in these ways. His eyes are on his children.